With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to On the Continent at the World Cup. I'm Andy Brassel.
I'm Lyle Seawatson.
And I'm David Cartledge.
On this World Cup edition, we've got a Samedi Soir showdown in the desert, but how will England keep their hopes hydrated against the world champions? By then, we'll know if Leo Messi's World Cup dream is still alive or if Louis van Gaal's Dutch can defy expectation. Of course, the last 16 isn't actually done yet. So will Cristiano Ronaldo A, get there, B, have the opportunity to help Portugal get there, or C, even come a cropper against the Swiss? Now, obviously, during the World Cup, chaps, we have a bit of cross-pollination, don't we, with various football cultures. I know you all enjoyed Brazil and their European stars last night, if they disgusted football culture by celebrating in a very non-European way. This dancing controversy is absolutely doing my head in that it is a controversy.
I, for one, enjoyed watching Tottenham's backup striker and that underwhelming West Ham signing do their stuff. On the big stage.
Are we talking about the goals or the dancing?
Well, both.
I was very disappointed, David, that we didn't get a forward flip from Paquetar.
I know, that's all that was missing. It was fantastic. To be fair, I think I might have finished Roy Keane off if there was a front flip. Yeah, yeah, they were fantastic.
Are Brazil the favourites for you, David?
Yeah, I'd say so. I think their level of play, their level of understanding. I don't think they've really been properly tested so far, but I think when they have had a test, their defence has stood up. They just don't really allow shots to happen from close distance.
Yeah.
South Korea had like a lot of shots from distance, I thought, trying to work the ball around, but Brazil's defence is excellent. So even if you do get past that defensive line, you've got Casemiro, one of the best defensive midfielders of all time there, you get to their defence and you've got an incredible array of centre-backs there. And if you get past them, you've then got Alisson Becker to get past, who is very, very difficult to get past. So they've got some incredible lines of defence.
Yeah, they're very clear favourites with the bookmakers. So anyone listening who feels that they shouldn't be the favourites, they need to hot-foot it down to... because there's money to be made here if you think they're not the favourites. No, they look very, very strong. And the thing hanging over them always, as the good Tim Vickery would say if he was with us, is... That made it sound like Tim's dead. He's not. He's just not on the show. what Tim Vickery would say, the esteemed Tim Vickery would say, which he keeps saying, is that we still don't know exactly what happens when this team comes up against one of the best European teams, because they don't have a great record in recent tournaments of defeating strong European opponents in the knockouts. They have a fairly abysmal record in such games, and I suppose they're a little bit untested in that because of the whole thing with the Nations League existing. It's hard to schedule high-profile friendlies now. So we don't really know how it'll... But I don't see an obvious reason why it wouldn't work. I think Chicha has a conundrum in midfield, which is, do you go with the full Yoga Bonito lineup with just Casemiro and Paqueta and Neymar somehow roaming around, and then the three attackers in front of those? Do you actually do that when you come up against one of the stronger opponents that you'll face? That's interesting. Maybe he'll be tempted to drop a Freji in there against Croatia.
I was going to say, I'm glad you clarified that, because Freji is listening to this going, I'm part of the Yoga Bonito lineup. Haven't I done well?
No, exactly. He's not. That's the whole thing. And I think there's a balance issue there, maybe against a stronger lineup. But the thing is, against Croatia, if it was a completely like fresh and rested and Croatia, then okay. Then you might say that midfielder Brozovic, Kovacic and Modric could really, you know, pose some questions to this Brazilian midfield. But first of all, they're really tired. They look knackered. Secondly, they really lack cutting edge up front. I mean, as Dave has rightly said, that defence is really strong. The goalkeeper's really strong. And Croatia are, like, messing about giving Ante Budimir minutes up front and stuff like this. I mean, they're clearly not in a great place up front.
A lot of their like kind of attack and pelt was coming from Perisic as well. Yeah. The strikers seemed to be quite isolated from the game. I thought first Kramaric and then Lavachak, who came on later on, and they couldn't really seem to get any rhythm together in attack. So again, I don't think they are the ones to present the test. I think if they were to play some possession football in midfield, get Modric and Kovacic running things, get Brazil chasing the game if they can. But that's the thing. I think Brazil need a better test. But my issue is, I don't think there is a big test there. I don't think anyone's particularly that good to test them.
Sorry, but they'll get it in the final. I mean, that's what will probably happen, right? They'll probably beat Croatia, then they'll get Argentina in the semis, most likely.
That Argentina game will be like a cup final as well. So you can almost say that one's kind of the anomaly. The other games will be tactical battles. I think the one with Argentina is going to be very emotionally driven.
Well, don't underestimate Croatia. They may be tired and grumpy, but they're like your granddad. They're not to be messed with. Let's talk about Europe's finest, though. Or not just France, of course, but England, who meet at Al Bayt on Saturday. It says here in my notes, France, they're not invincible. I don't know if Gary Barlow's been at these. We've had a lot of traffic about it, as you can imagine. A reminder that you can tweet us at Football Ramble, at Andy Brassel, at Lars Sivertsen, and at David Xhaka, J-A-C-A. We've got a couple here from Aaron on Insta. How many goals are England going to beat France by? From Dan on Twitter, where will England be looking for weak points in the French side? Now, there is a danger, isn't there, Lars, of sort of seeing France as this Mbappe-headed bogeyman with no weak points. We all know, all three of us, that that is not the case, don't we?
I wouldn't fully agree with that. I think... it's a really funny one with the French, because I think, as you know, I have my suspicions of Didier Deschamps. I haven't fully forgiven him for the sort of Rabiot wing-back debacle at the Euros. But I do think, partially because of the injuries, he has stumbled upon an 11 that really works here. Now, I don't think this is the 11 he'd be playing if everyone was fit. But the way it's turned out, it's working quite well. I would like to see how this team holds up against a strong opponent, right? Because it's really exciting to watch. You got Giroud up front doing his big, handsome Giroud thing. You got the link between him and Mbappe, and then you know Ousmane Dembele doing it on the right flank, and Theo Hernandez playing because Luka obviously got injured. You know, bombing on down the left. But we are talking about a team that's playing a striker and two wingers who don't really defend much. I mean, Mbappe's not going to do much defensively. Dembele's not going to do much defensively. So you're asking Griezmann to drop quite a lot deeper to pick up some of the slack and get involved, and he's been doing that so far in the tournament. But you also have Theo Hernandez, who's not a great defender. So a flank with Mbappe, who doesn't defend, and Theo Hernandez, who isn't great at defending, that seems a little bit vulnerable to me off the ball.
I mean, it's fortunate that Griezmann can do the running of, what, six people, isn't it, David? I mean, the thing that strikes me...
it's well-rested.
There are a lot of parallels between England and France. I think both of them need to improve on their last 16 displays, because England weren't great in the first half hour against Senegal, and France had their moments, certainly, against Poland. Also, you've got two of the most attacking teams in the tournament who you would not have picked as the most attacking teams in the tournament at the start. I mean, has that kind of happened by default, and does that mean we're in for a World Cup classic?
I think we'll be in for a really... Honestly, I think we'll be in for a really good game. I don't think it's going to be a lot of goals in it. You know, if I was a betting man, I wouldn't say there'll be many goals in it at all. I think it's going to be tense in places, quite fraught. I think there will be definitely chances. I noticed against Poland as well. I think it was across the three group games. I think Poland had only managed four shots on target. Yeah, in the first half against France, they managed to double that.
Yeah.
So France are there. So the stats are there to show that they are there to be got at. I definitely don't think they're, I don't think they're on Brazil's level, for instance, in terms of being as impregnable. I think they can be got at. So we'll see if England... That's the thing, though. You need to have the initiative. If you are going to go at a team, you need to have the initiative to go at them. And I sometimes question how much England will have the initiative in these games and whether they think about defence first before their own attacking approach.
I think that's a really good point, David. And going back to what you were saying, Lars, about that French left side that's functioned really well in an attacking sense between Theo Hernandez and Kylian Mbappe. I mean, I remember going back to the first game that France played against Australia when Theo came on for Luka, and immediately Theo adds something to the attacking part of the team, sets up Rabiot's goal. You know, he's a footballer that's great footballer that's kind of viced into this defensive register, really. Every time the ball goes over his head, he doesn't know where it is. His positioning is all over the shop. And you saw that even against Australia. Now, the funny thing is, Bukayo Saka has been brilliant so far. There's absolutely no knocking that. I wonder if England would be missing a trick employing someone who cuts in when there's loads of space outside Theo Hernandez. Is there an argument for having a right footer on that side, or someone who goes outside a bit more rather than inside?
But this would be an argument for going to the back three, wouldn't it?
Having
Kyle Walker as a right-sided centre half, primarily with a brief to tracking Mbappe, and then unleashing Kieran Trippier ahead of that to really exploit the space behind Hernandez, which we know how devastating Trippier can be going forward and can put crosses in. I mean, that's an interesting one. I mean, David mentions Poland. I thought Poland really surprised a lot of people by being much more aggressive and much more front foot in that game, having been just an abomination against Argentina and just doing nothing. And then everyone assumed they'd just get smacked by France, but they actually came out on the front foot. And I mean, to say they were rattled would maybe go too far, but the French were not comfortable with that. I didn't think they looked happy at all when Poland came at them the way they did. But that begs the question, are England going to do that? Because I'm not fully convinced that's how they will approach the game.
No, I suppose that's the thing. When you look at it, David, like, Poland had nothing to lose, really. Very much second favourites against France. You know, that you either go hard or go home, I suppose. Whereas I wonder if France and England, who, despite what some people are saying, are two fairly evenly matched sides. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Certainly in terms of talent, in terms of form, in terms of approach to the tournament. Does that go the other way? There's a lot more to lose in this situation.
Oh, there's a hell of a lot to lose, and I think it will be cagey. Like I said, I think it's going to be really tense between them. I think the magnitude of the game and who they're facing up to as well. I think, you know, so far both teams haven't looked across the field and seen another team of absolute superstars. They're each going to look back at each other like that and kind of go, all right, if we make one little mistake here, that could be the difference between us staying and going out.
No, I think so. And we're here mainly to talk about France and not so much to talk about England. But, I mean, that is the eternal knock against Gareth Southgate, is as well as England have done under him. When in a tournament have they beaten an opponent that was like right near the global elite and on the top of their game? I mean, the closest thing would be Germany, I suppose. But looking at Germany's recent tournament record, maybe, as much as that was an incredibly cathartic moment for England as a sporting nation, you know, maybe it wasn't the banner victory we kind of thought it was at the time. I mean, we make fun of the Belgian golden generation, but they knocked out Brazil and Russia, a very good Brazil team. And that sort of definitive victory against a very strong opponent, England actually haven't had under Southgate, in spite of going to the semis and then going to the final of the Euros. So this is the moment for him.
Yeah, this is the opposite of what Southgate's England have normally got. They've benefited from good draws.
Yes.
And there's no doubt about that. Whereas this is very much a big test very early. So it's something completely different to deal with. But you talked about Southgate and our suspicions about him. What about Deschamps? And, you know, a coach who's won the World Cup, a coach who's been in charge for a decade, a coach who probably won't be in charge much longer, David, I think it's fair to say, with Zinedine Zidane kind of creeping in the wings. And I would say Zidane ends up there within the fortnight if England beat them at the weekend. I think it's that close. But Deschamps has put a little few things in our heads. And Lars touched on it earlier when he talked about Adrian Rabiot playing left wing back, which was just a mess in the last Euros. He does tend to try and make things up on the fly, and he's not very good at making things up on the fly. He's not one of life's great improvisers. And I think what really shook France, and what is the doubt in the back of French minds, and I think there's a degree of confidence in the French media, but they're very aware of how good England are, was that third group match against Tunisia. Because then is the point when they realise, David, that the reserves, the coiffeurs, the hairdressers, as they call them in France, they're not their second team. Because of all the injuries, it's effectively a third team.
Yeah, that's a good
and
point. Yep.
Compared to England, there's a massive drop-off, I think, between the first 15, 16 of France and the rest.
I think so as well. I think if you look at England's squad depth, it's insane. You'd probably say them and Brazil have probably got the most options if they were to encounter an injury. I think also tournaments are... It's a situation where you need players who perhaps weren't in your initial mindset, in your initial 11, to come on and to come through and to kind of, you know, be a star of sorts. France are probably still waiting for that. I think there's a few coming to the England team. I think we saw when the minutes have been given out, you know, there was a big debate about Rashford coming in. Phil Foden didn't start the first game. He stepped up as well. Obviously, Deo Hernandez came in purely due to an injury with his brother, but you know you look at France and you say, right, well, who's the player or the players on the bench really pushing for a place in that starting 11? Who could come in and really cause trouble for somebody who's there? And I don't know who there is. And also when it comes to that, and again, and I think there's parallels between Southgate and Deschamps as well, in that they've had a degree of success, both of them. Obviously Deschamps is much larger with the World Cup, but people still aren't fully convinced about them. And it's funny when you're arguing about them and debating about them. You know, some people will just think you're crazy. You're like, oh, Deschamps won the World Cup. Oh, Southgate took England to a Euros final. But I still think there are big doubts about both of them and their approach and how they go. There's still something missing, I think, with both of them that will fully convince people.
I don't disagree with any of that, but I think it's worth asking the question, does depth actually matter in a game like that? I mean, how many players do you need to come off the bench, really? And at the end of the day, they have just a stone-cold match winner up front in Kylian Mbappe, who...
I guess that's the question. If Mbappe plays well, can England win this?
Well, I'm not convinced. Now, I actually think, I want to repeat this, and I may have said it both on this and other podcasts in the past, that I think Benzema not being there is a really big advantage for Mbappe.
I agree.
Because it clarifies the hierarchy of the team. Now, if that sounds a bit vague and wishy-washy... First goal against Poland is a great example, and let me tell you why. The first goal Mbappe scores. If you look at that goal, people will remember it. Oh, yeah, he smashed it in the top corner, really good. Notice, Giroud is clear on the back stick there. Giroud has made a really clever movement and is completely clear for the cross on the back post there. And he's got his arms up and he's going, "Bonjour, ici, I am Giroud. Je suis dans le back post." And here's the thing. Mbappe doesn't care. He's like, that's great, Olivier, but I'm Mbappe, and I know you're unmarked, but also the top corner is also unmarked, so I'm going to put the ball there. Now, if it's Benzema making that run, I think Mbappe takes a split second to consider, should I maybe cross this? Should I pass this?
You know what? I felt in the Euros last year, David, there's a strong element of blind date, wasn't there, between Mbappe, Benzema, and Griezmann. And you don't actually get the best out of any of the three, do you? Whereas you have to say, you've talked about Giroud, you've talked about Mbappe quite rightly. Griezmann has arguably been the player of the tournament so far.
I completely agree. I said exactly this on Twitter the other day. I said pretty much Griezmann, Bruno Fernandes have been the best two players of the tournament for me. I think his usage, you know, we've talked about criticising Deschamps, but he's got Griezmann's role right, perfectly right again, to the level I've had Atleti fans messaging me going, do you think maybe we should get Griezmann playing this role when he comes back to Atleti next year? So yeah, he's been fantastic. He's playing as an 8, but he's also playing as a 5, as a 10. He's out on the wings as well still, and he's very much the Swiss Army knife player. He has got everything about him in this team and what he can do. He's creating chances, but he's also cutting out passing angles. I think off the ball, he's one of the best players in the world. His intelligence when he's without possession and the way that he understands positional play is fantastic. And yeah, for me, he's been very important. And if they were to lose him, I've made the point, I still think if they lost Griezmann, it would be a bigger loss than losing Mbappe.
So, right, I'm not having you two wriggling out of this question before we move on. If Mbappe stays fit, plays well, can England win last?
Of course, it's a team sport.
David?
Of course, absolutely.
I don't agree with either of you, but...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
Now, it feels strange having this discussion about Europe's absolute best and not including the Netherlands, but I think it's fair to say it is not the greatest Netherlands side we've ever seen, on paper at least. They have had the best return to their hotel, and I say that with all due respect to England after the Senegal game, and obviously Jack Grealish was at the heart of it. I don't think there will be a more iconic image in this tournament than a Memphis Depay dancing behind a Denzel Dumfries mask. But that really does say where they are at the moment. But despite all that, despite the fact they're very unconvincing in the groups, and certainly in those opening two games against Senegal, which they could have lost, and certainly against Ecuador too, the Netherlands are there. And they can beat Argentina, can't they, David?
They absolutely can. They're one of the most disciplined teams at the tournament. Van Gaal has, you know, it's not pretty by any means at times. And sometimes it is, don't get me wrong. I loved it the other day. Somebody said to me that it was total Catenaccio against the US. And I like that because it was. They lured them in. They lured them in. And I saw one of the best individual tactical moves I've seen in the tournament as well, with Davy Klaassen doing a man-to-man job on Tyler Adams. It completely reduced Tyler Adams' influence, who was the US's best player coming into that game, and they couldn't move the ball quick enough. If it didn't go through him, then they couldn't move the ball quick enough, and Holland were able to just get behind the ball, defensively set up very, very well. And it was a smart move. And it was classic Van Gaal. And on the counter, they were fantastic. They broke with speed. They broke with a lot of intelligence as well, technique. And of course, you know, that man Gakpo adding, what, 10 million to his value every goal now, is it? You know, I'm getting a bit more expensive for Man United, isn't he?
Now, you talked about them having a plan for Tyler Adams. There's someone else who they might have that in mind for, Lars. We've got a question here from Albert on Insta. What do you make of the Dutch? Can they win it all? Or will Messi or Brazil/France be too much for them?
Well, I was really impressed. Well, I think win it all, I think, is a bit strong. But I was really impressed by how they approached the USA game, because I've been watching the US very carefully during this tournament, because I've been doing some work with some American people and just really looking at this team. And they have strengths, you know. But Van Gaal devised a plan that was very, very canny. And like David says, he had David Klaassen blocking off the Tyler Adams thing. But also, I think I can tell David Klaassen to do that and he'll probably do it. He seems like that kind of guy. He's a team player. He does what he's told. But what I thought was really impressive was how surprisingly disciplined Depay and Gakpo were in the first half at cutting off the passing lanes from the center halves and out to the fullbacks and to the eights for the US. And with their positioning, they kind of forced the center halves to play centrally, like when Zimmerman and Ream tried to move the ball forwards. The pass out wide wasn't available to them, so they had to go through the middle, where the Netherlands were man-man, like David said, like Klaassen was on Tyler Adams, De Jong and Martin de Roon were looking after the eights. So they ended up with just nowhere to play the ball, and playing long isn't really an option, because Van Dijk was going to eat that up all day, and he just kind of shut down the US, and they ended up having quite a bit of possession, but in areas that were completely unhelpful to them.
I mean, this has real implications in terms of Argentina feeding Messi. I mean, they've kind of evolved this situation, haven't they, Lars, around Messi, where they've got exactly the runners who can do the running for him. I think, you know, you look at the introduction of Julian Alvarez, I think that's made a massive difference. They desperately need Angel Di Maria back. I don't think there's any doubt about that, because Papu Gomez, we'll come to you on that in a minute, David, looks cooked in my view. He's been in really poor form for Sevilla. If they can shut down the supply to Messi, it could be quite frustrating for him. I mean, in a way, is this not nearly as sexy Dutch team on paper actually quite well set to shut Messi out, Lars?
They could be. I think it's about cutting off the supply line. In Argentina, I feel like, aside from the second half against Australia, when they started going through the gears a little bit because they were, you know, very comfortable, I haven't seen them really play well at all in this tournament.
Are they capable of it? I suppose it's only really
in the second half against Argentina and against Australia. And even then, they managed to concede a goal and nearly mess it up in the end. I mean, even though Messi was adding some moments to his compilation tapes in that half, and that was good to see, and everyone was having a grand time, that's fine. But they've looked very underwhelming for a lot of the tournament so far.
I mean, when we're talking, David, about that midfield that Argentina have composed, and they have brought in Enzo Fernandez after insanely leaving him out for the first couple of games. He's been in wonderful form with Benfica. Rodrigo de Paul has kind of held on, which I find a little bit unusual. He's been quite underwhelming for Atletico so far. Okay, that's not necessarily important in the Argentina context. I remember thinking in the celebrations after the Australia game, I've been wondering, why does de Paul keep getting picked? He was having a very, very long lingering cuddle with Messi. Now, not that Messi has ever petitioned to pick his mates before ahead of the good of the team. But, well, I'll let you finish this sentence, David.
Watch every video of Argentina arriving to stadiums, getting off buses, just going through the tunnel, coming out for their warm-up. Look at the pictures as well. De Paul is always at Messi's side. He's the bodyguard. That's why he's there. He is Messi's
mate. Argentina's Kevin Costner.
Look, you'd be silly to not assume that, you know, Messi has considerable influence over who gets in this Argentina squad, who gets in this Argentina team. And De Paul is one of his picks. It's the worst kept secret now in Argentina. So that's why he keeps getting in there. But yeah, he's been really poor. I'd actually go as far to say he's been worse than what he's been at Atleti. I think he's been that bad. And he's been kind of saved by, I think, a breakout tournament from McAllister. McAllister's been fantastic. I think without his movement from deep, his late arrivals in the box, then I think Argentina would be... They would have been really scraping it to get out that group. I think they would have been even in bigger trouble. Enzo Fernandez came in, like you say, but I thought against Australia he played far too deep. They were clearly using him as the third centre-back, so he was building from deep. They were kind of hoping to do that so Messi didn't have to drop so deep, but eventually Messi still had to do it, and I think he's going to have to do it again. He's going to have to drop very, very deep, and that's what Van Gaal will want, and he'll be thinking, look, he's the best player of all time. There's a keep him away from the goal. Try and keep him deep. Keep him in those deep areas. Yes, he's got an incredible passing range where he can loft the ball over the top, but look, you'd rather have Messi 30, 40 yards from goal than on the edge of your area.
Well, we've talked about the magician on one side. I'd be lying, Lars, if I didn't say I'd been looking for a long time towards asking you this question. Memphis is getting himself fit, isn't he?
You love that man.
You know what? I think him being really fit and looking properly sharp made a massive difference against the US, didn't it?
It really did, because in the group stage, it was Cody Gakpo as really the only one doing anything for this team. Like, I can't. They had two shots over 90 minutes against Ecuador. Like, they were not good in the group stage at all, the Dutch.
Is there budget Ibra vibes to Gakpo and his role in this Netherlands team?
Maybe a little bit, yeah. But then, of course, yeah, having Depay come back and look a lot sharper against the US than he did earlier, then that makes a big difference. The way that game panned out, I mean, it was all about the wingbacks, really. And they won 3-1, and Dumfries had a goal and two assists, and Daley Blind had a goal and one assist. Like, it was all about the wingbacks, baby.
Now, if I was a cynical man, I would be thinking about Inter rubbing their hands together, thinking, we were trying to sell Denzel Dumfries in the summer for a reasonable fee to plug a huge financial hole. Has this great World Cup for Dumfries come at exactly the right time for Inter, David?
I think it has, but not for when it comes to Lautaro Martinez.
What on earth is happening there?
No one's buying him. No one's paid 60, 70 million for him.
He doesn't want to be sold, does he? He clearly doesn't want to be sold.
He does not. No, Dumfries is definitely playing for the move. Lautaro clearly loves it in Milan, and he doesn't want to go. So,
quite remarkable. One miss he had when he just threw his arms in the air and was like, what is happening? Like, what is that?
Well, our good friend Miguel Delaney tweeted at that point, Lautaro Higuain. I quite enjoyed.
I'm pretty sure if you go back and watch the highlights, you can see the moment Higuain's spirit just enters the body of Lautaro.
So if you're thinking of it from Scaloni's perspective, and you're not only thinking about a runner for Messi, who makes it most difficult for Virgil van Dijk?
On current form, you can just leave Lautaro alone, because he's going to kick the ball into the stands for no reason anyways. I think you have to start Alvarez, right?
Yeah, I think he has to start. But look, maybe it's my La Liga bias here. And I saw Papu Gomez not really making any runs, not really doing anything, quite frankly, just enjoying being part of things.
I'm just here for the vibe.
Angel Correa, just a brilliant runner between the lines. He makes nippy little moves. He's very, very smart off the ball. He could be somebody who just buzzes around and causes problems and makes Virgil van Dijk look over his shoulder and just makes him second guess. So that would be my player.
Has he had minutes at all, or is he dropping him in?
No, I don't think he has. I don't think he's even had any minutes at all. Yeah, he's one of the players not to get a kick so far.
Now, as we said earlier, the last 16 isn't actually done yet. I know we're full of enthusiasm about the quarterfinals, but the last 16 game is one of the most intriguing of them all, as Portugal take on Switzerland. Obviously, a lot of historical and migratory links between those two teams. There genuinely is. You know, we all love these weird press conference moments. Mm. One of my favourites in recent days was William Carvalho going, I had no idea Diogo Costa, his own goalkeeper, was born in Switzerland.
Mm.
Born there and lived there until he was seven before moving to Porto, which is a fairly typical Portuguese migration story, I would say. Now, Portugal are really, really hard to pick what we're expecting of them. I've always said they're very, very good at handling the Ronaldo situation, because they've been handling all this stuff for over a decade, and they're used to the drama and all the nonsense, and they can shield the rest of the squad from that, etc., etc. There has been a big departure, Lars, in the fact that Fernando Santos has given Ronaldo a right telling off in public. He's never been there before, and he wouldn't commit to having him in the starting lineup for this game against Switzerland. This is huge, isn't it?
Yeah, well, yes, it does seem to be. It's not something that's really happened before. I've also noted that reports that increasingly Portuguese people don't want him in the lineup because they can identify that this is a guy who's just not doing it for them anymore. And I do wonder if with Fernando Santos, he's in a position now where what kind of leverage does Cristiano Ronaldo really have? Because in previous tournaments and camps, if he was acting up and just behaving like a, well, the way he can behave, Fernando Santos would have to say, well, what if he throws a strop and sort of decides not to play for me anymore or goes to the FA and whatever. But Fernando Santos knows, like, the guy's cooked, like, the guy is done. He's heading off to, you know, looks like he's heading off to Saudi Arabia afterwards. I mean, this is a guy who's no longer massively relevant in the sporting sense unless he can actually come up with something for me in these 90 minutes. So why not put a bit of heat on him?
Is Fernando Santos like just the last man on earth to find out that Cristiano is an absolute prick? It's strange. They've been together a while. They've been in many tournaments.
Piers Morgan is still behind him on that list.
So, you know, God, I'm expecting another interview after this. It's just I think I completely agree with everything what Lars is saying. I think, you know, he might still have a role in this squad, but, like, I don't know. I don't think it's the one he's got designs over. I don't think it's the one where he thinks he has. I think there's other players there pushing now. And this just doesn't look good. This is just really, really bad once again. It just seems to be following Cristiano right now. It should be, I don't know, man. He's older. He should be settling down, cigar and slippers. But
could there be an element of, you know, if there's one thing that seems to motivate Ronaldo, it's sticking it to the haters. And in his
100%.
Mind, the haters is any person who's not 100% drinking the Ronaldo Kool-Aid. You know, any kind of gentle criticism means you are a hater.
But do you think
Fernando Santos thinks, okay, the future doesn't matter right now. The future is irrelevant. Squad harmony is irrelevant. The only thing that matters is if we can get something from this guy against Switzerland. So maybe stick it to him a little bit in the press conference and see if you get a reaction.
It's an interesting theory. I mean, we have to say that many of the greatest footballers of our times and times past have always been, you're either with me or against me. Thierry Henry, for example, is a very, very good example of that. You know, any sort of perceived criticism he used as fuel. Mm. That was very much part of what he did. But what do we actually expect from Portugal in this situation, David? Because they are one of the hardest teams to pick in this tournament. They were absolutely shambolic against Ghana in that first game and won it through, what, probably 10 minutes of great individual moments with João Félix and Rafael Leão being a big part of that, with their goals particularly. And then you have the performance against Uruguay, which against a really tough opponent is measured, disciplined, polished. And then you get that game against South Korea with 9 players who probably won't start the game. So we really have no idea of what to expect from Portugal here, if we're being completely honest, do we?
No, not at all. I think it's all rather chaotic. I think they have the personnel to control games, to dominate games, to take the games to opponents. Sometimes they don't do it, but I think there's also a few players in the squad that can let them down as well. So yeah, it creates a, you know, pretty chaotic vibe. I think they're going to be interesting to watch, though, but, like, not interesting purely through Fernando Santos's tactical brilliance, and Portugal are amazing to watch. They're just for the fact that they are chaotic and unpredictable.
I mean, I guess one side benefit to this Ronaldo situation, Lars, is it does quite definitively make it Bruno Fernandes' team. And Bruno Fernandes needs to set the register to be his most effective, doesn't he? He needs to run things.
Yeah, but then he's still in the team, isn't he, Ronaldo? I mean, he's not... Brassel, as the most Portuguese-savvy person on the broadcast, do you think he benches him? Do you think there's any chance of that happening?
I think it's unlikely, but I think the way the team plays, it's more acceptable for everything to go through Fernandes now. Mm. I think that's the important thing. There's not the political and cosmetic pressure to play everything through Ronaldo. Because
do you think the players realise he's gone, so they might as well not play it to him all the time anymore?
Yeah, I think that they realise that he's part of it, but he's not the central piece anymore, which is really important. Now, I think when you have evidence, like that game against Uruguay is really good evidence, I think, of when Fernandes run things, Portugal are way, way more effective. And I think, when you've got a situation like against Ghana, where they're just vicing loads of good players into really weird non-positions that they don't play for their clubs, I think that is something that they really can't repeat. You need to get players in the slot that they perform for their clubs. Now, I think you see that with Bernardo Silva, who a lot of people actually have spoken for a couple of years now, and with increasingly loud voices, as maybe going to be Portugal's most important player going forward.
No, he's great, yeah.
And you start that game against Ghana with, I talked about this in the ramble, with Bernardo Silva dribbling the ball across his own penalty box. And like, what harm is he going to do? You were talking earlier, David, about Messi being so far from goal that he can't be effective. Well, Bernardo Silva can actually run, but if he's 90 yards from goal, he's not going to be able to do anything. When he's further up the pitch against Uruguay, Portugal are a different proposition, aren't they?
Oh, absolutely. He's one. I think in terms of a centre midfielder, he's one of the best dribblers there is. So you do want him in that final third, especially against teams that are going to sit in. The Swiss are going to sit in tonight. They're going to play two very, very tight lines between their defence and midfield. And it's going to be a case where you're going to want Bernardo to do that, to pick up the ball, to drive at the teams, to pull people out of position and allow others to move into the spaces that are left. So it'll be interesting to see if Switzerland can also keep him away from goal as well.
So I understand why they can't drop him, because, he is who he is. And you have, the millions of little Ronaldo bros on the internet being all angry and sad. But do you not think this team would be more efficient if the game plan was Bruno and Bernardo Silva play as many through balls towards João Félix and Rafael Leão as they possibly can? Is that not a better game plan for them than trying to set up Ronaldo somehow?
It could be. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And the thing that we have to bear in mind is Switzerland are not that exciting. They are very, very organised. I think they've got past that point where we can talk about them as a fly in the ointment, a potential banana skin. I don't think that
fly in the fondue.
Well, that's even worse for me. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I'm non-dairy. But I think when you look at this Swiss team, they have got every right to say that, okay, maybe player for player, we are not the equals of Portugal. Team-wise, they're at least the equals of Portugal. And what they have this time, as well as organisation, as well as players who are used to playing in a certain system and in the right positions, as well as having a brilliant goalkeeper in Jan Sommer, and getting him fit is absolutely huge for them, David. They have got a striker in Brel Embolo who's actually in great form and starting to fulfil his promise. I don't think we can really be talking about the Swiss as being second favourites going into this.
Yeah, I'm really glad you brought Embolo up, because I think, his hold-up player, his ability to relieve that pressure off Switzerland, who do play deep, who do spend a lot of time defending, they have that focal point in Embolo who can hold it up and just give them a chance just to come out of defence and push everybody up 25, 30 yards, and then Switzerland can start attacks. And they have. They've been really, really good against... look at them against Serbia. Obviously, there was a lot on the line with that game, as everybody knows, with all the geopolitics involved there. But if you look at that performance... if you saw that performance, there was a lot of personality there. There's a lot of character. I think sometimes look at this, people go at the Swiss and go, yeah, they're completely forgettable. Are they actually here? What Switzerland are in the World Cup? But that was a performance where they showed a lot of personality, character, and it's something they can use against Portugal here.
I'd be very intrigued to see what Sheridan Shaqiri's role is.
He scored his goal for the tournament
because
now.
He is very often the spice in the casserole here, the thing that I couldn't do another fondue joke. Do the Swiss do casseroles? Well, who knows? But he's often the guy who livens up an otherwise slightly boring team. But we saw against Serbia, he was really after about an hour, he was like, I'm not running anymore. Sheridan is finished. I think he's not been great for the Chicago Fire. But the point is, As you saw against Serbia, he does turn up with the goal. Like, he is the guy who can do the unexpected for them a little bit, and I think he's an important part. I do wonder how you play it with this, whether you start him knowing that you're going to have to sub him, or if you start someone else and bring him on halfway through the second half, thinking what in the case it goes to extra time and this sort of thing.
There's not many people, Lars, who I would accept the line he's not been great for the Chicago Fire from, but I feel very confident.
But he hasn't.
Accepting
he's
that
been
from
very
you.
Underwhelming.
Yeah, well, I guess he really is, as Vish once described, yes. The Minecraft Messi in terms of athletic effort and capacity these days as well.
I think he's 31. He really doesn't look like he's 31, man, like in terms of how his...
Tough paper round, it's fair to say.
I've got to tell you, I mean, some of these... You watch Atiba Hutchinson play for Canada, he's 39, he looks like he's in better nick than Shaqiri.
But I guess really the Embolo thing is important, isn't it? Because we've had this discussion throughout the World Cup of, you know, veteran muscle memory versus in form. Embolo arrives at this World Cup really in form. And this is what Switzerland haven't had before. And I don't think you can get away from the fact we've talked earlier in this tournament about the USA. Defended really well. There's a lot of merit to what they're doing. And then they've got the choice between what? Josh Sargent and Haji Wright.
Or Jesus Ferreira.
Yeah, exactly. And then you're looking at Embolo, a guy who always had lots of potential, which was completely derailed by injury. In the past, it was Seferovic, who was expected to score the goals for them. But now, of course, I think part of the fact that he's been forced out at club level, that's another thing we can thank Mauro Icardi for, a bit of a hat tip to him. You look at Embolo, and I think he has a little look at that Portuguese defence and thinks, yeah, I fancy some of that.
This Swiss period now, I mean, this is not a... Maybe not a golden generation, but it has been a very strong generation. They've consistently made it to tournaments. They've consistently made it out of group stage. Yeah. And I do feel like they've been one elite striker away from going further. And maybe with the awakening of Brielle Embolo, then maybe that's what they have.
With that in mind, I'm going to press you for a prediction before we go. David?
I'm going to go 2-0 Portugal.
Portugal on penalties.
I think Switzerland on penalties.
Ooh.
Oh, this is exciting. Maybe we should get Pete to do another live stream.
The Football Ramble is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And on my way around a duck.
So if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.